Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors. Welcome to the program. The show is Mud Toe at Midnight. I am your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. Joining me this evening, please try out our other shows here on the With Insights radio channel of Blog Talk Radio. And that would be Iggy and Rosa's Intuitive Readings, Mondays at 6 p.m. Jenny Seek, Inner Voice Intuitive Hour, Tuesdays at 7. And then Heather Tapia, Entrepreneurial Excellence Show, which is Wednesdays at 2 p.m. And then there's me, Mud Toe Sasquatch, Fridays at midnight. Mud Toe at midnight, hence the name. Things have been rather odd at Mud Toe Central this evening, so please bear with me. I know that this evening, as soon as I'm off the air, I need to get to sleep, which is always a problem. I mean, getting to sleep after I've been on the air. But I have to because I need to scoot in the morning. I have a family obligation, which I did not even know about a few hours ago. But I do have a family member who's in a bit of difficulty and needs some help moving some stuff either to or from a storage facility. I didn't quite get that clear, but I didn't know. I was planning on, of course, visiting the folks for the upcoming Memorial Day holiday. And I didn't know. I thought I might be working tomorrow, or not, would it be tomorrow? No, Sunday afternoon I thought I might be working at the theater. There was a show scheduled, but we don't have a very good record of getting the Sunday shows, getting enough tickets sold to Sunday shows to actually put them on. So I didn't know if the show would actually happen or not. So I told the mom that I would come. If there was a show on Sunday, I would come on Sunday evening. If there was not a show, I would come on Saturday afternoon. She said, fine. So I called her earlier today and said, it's going to be Saturday afternoon because the show did get canceled. And she said, great, you can help this family member move his stuff. And I felt like calling the director and says, can we get that show back on again? Oh, because I don't like, not that I don't like helping people out, I just don't like moving. I don't even like moving myself, let alone moving somebody else. And then if there's a storage unit involved and we're moving out of the storage unit, I'd bet serious money, if I had any, that this is the last day they have to move stuff out of that storage unit, which means we're up against a deadline. And there's a certain, especially with people in, and many people in my family, there's a certain, I won't say lack of respect, a certain, what I want to say, a lack of urgency, no sense of urgency regarding deadline. And then all of a sudden you're on top of them. Oh, we gotta run like hell to get this all done. So I'm anticipating all these negative things. And of course, my new age friends would say that if I anticipate them, the universe is going to assume that I want them and make them happen. Now, I would think that the universe will be intelligent enough to discern my anxieties, or be able to tell the difference between what I'm anxious about and what I actually want to happen. But they say no, so I'm trying to keep this stuff out of my mind so that bad things won't happen. And it will just be a relatively simple matter of moving stuff out of a storage locker and into a van, and then out of a van and into somebody's basement. Just keep a good thought, and that they're all relatively light boxes, that we're not going to be moving any cupboards or anything like that. So I'm keeping those happy thoughts in my mind as I drag my sorry ass out of bed early tomorrow after having finished this radio show at half an hour after midnight. Drag all my stuff out to the car because I take my laundry to my mother's house and I do my laundry by my house because I like the way her laundry machine does my laundry. I don't make her do my laundry anymore. That would be kind of cruel since she's in her 70s. I do the laundry myself, I promise. I do. But it, you know, saves me a little money at the laundromat. Very little, because the laundromat really isn't that expensive. And sometimes if it gets to be, you know, it's been too long since I've been home, I do have to run to the laundromat to to do my stuff. And I usually do my bedding at the laundromat because I, for some reason, it just feels weird taking my sheets home and doing them. Usually it gets a habit I got into when I was actually sexually active and I had female guests, and the evidence would be left behind on the sheets, and I would just do the sheets myself. I guess I just kind of got into that habit, even though it's really not necessary for that reason anymore. Anyway, there's a little bit of TMI for you. Now that's also kind of a delaying tactic for me not to get into what I need to talk about next. This, let me back off of that a little bit. I haven't really made that decision yet. I am not so sure that I am that I'm sober now. I know that's a really weird thing to say. I haven't been drinking and I haven't been drugging, but there is more to sobriety than that. Now, a typical AA will tell you that's not the case, that sobriety is all about substances. I happen to disagree. I think that I know people who haven't had a drop for 20 years, but they're not sober because they've never addressed the reason. They never addressed the thing that drove their addiction. What was it that caused them to be an addict? I tend to think of it as something that's missing as opposed to something that's present and needs to be banished. But however you think of it, without identifying that and doing something about it, sobriety is not complete. And at any rate, I have a streak of 3 years and 63 days of continuous sobriety, which I define not just as staying away from the substance, but also staying away from the behaviors that that defined my addiction. And a lot of that had to do with trying to buy people's affection by, being the sort of life of the party, the Oscar Schindler guy. If you've seen the beginning of Oscar Schindler, where he gets in good with everybody by buying them drinks and buying them food and everything. That was me. And then a part of my drinking and my substance abuse was a part of that social scene that I constructed for myself to get the attention of people, but mainly women, that might not have paid attention to me otherwise. So that was a slope that I slipped on this evening. And I didn't drink. I didn't drug. I didn't put myself in danger. I didn't put anyone else in danger. And I didn't do anything illegal. So those are all, thank goodness, wipe my brow. Thank you very much to my higher power for keeping me out of that. So let's say my last slip, which was 3 years and 63 days ago, April the 30th, 2011, was the last time I faced this situation, and it was much more clear-cut because I did something that was illegal, and I also used substances. So, without getting into the details, I wrote about it once on my blog. It's been a little while ago. If you're interested, you might have to do a little research. I can't really tell you exactly where to look for it, but it's on the blog. It's been within the last 6 months, I believe. So if you're interested in reading about it, I won't rehash the whole story here, but it is on the blog, mudtoesasquatch.com. So nothing like that in this, which is why I'm sort of going back and forth about whether I want to reset my sobriety over this or not. The main issue is that I spent a lot of money, that I should not have spent because I'm only working part-time jobs. I'm in a very dire financial situation, and I won't know the total until the receipts come in. I have to go through them. I have some of them. I don't know if I brought one. But anyway, the total is something like $500. And I know that because that's my daily spending limit on my debit card. And as I got to that, I might have done more damage if that had not been in place. So thank goodness for that. But because when I go out and do that and I slip back into that behavior so easily, it makes me question whether I can still call myself sober, even though I didn't use any of the substances. even though I didn't do anything that I could get arrested for. There's a story I honestly don't know if I've ever told this story on the air or ever written about it. But it's something my sponsor said to me during my early days in the program. And I was looking over a schedule for a large meeting I was thinking of attending, you know, like a great gathering of addicts in some city. And they have, you know, they have a program of talks. And then, of course, they have meetings that are going on constantly all the time in case people need them. I'm talking about 12-step meetings. And I was noticing in the program that some of the meetings were marked as Tier 2 and Tier 3 meetings, and I didn't know what that meant. So I asked my sponsor, and he said those are for people who have, or for AA members who have broken the law. And Tier 2 is for nonviolent offenders, and Tier 3 is for violent offenders, people who have probably spent time in prison. And they make special meetings for them because anonymity is very, very, very important. You know, if someone found out that they were, obviously disclosure is required in some circumstances, but you know, when it's not, or if you know, somebody happened to be looking for someone for some reason, anonymity is even more important to someone who has broken the law than to someone who's not. So there are certainly, if someone's going to reveal that in a share or something, it's better for them to be only in a room with people who have the same issue. And I remember saying to my sponsor, well, I'm glad I don't have to worry about that. And my sponsor looked at me kind of funny. He said, well, you've told me that you did a lot of things, you know, in your addiction that were illegal. And I said, yeah, but I was never arrested. I was never caught or anything. And my sponsor said, well, what the hell does that have to do with it? You know, I did it just because I got caught. Doesn't erase it. And I thought about it. That's right. And maybe I was dismissing a lot of those things and not taking proper responsibility, not taking responsibility properly for some of my more questionable behaviors, simply because I never got caught. And it's not entirely true, because I do kind of keep an eye out sometimes. I remember, you know, some of the things I did putting aside what the numbers exactly are, there's, you know, statute of limitations. There's after a certain amount of time, the police can't bring charges against you for certain crimes. A certain really bad crime, so I think if you kill somebody, there's no statute of limitations on that. But other crimes, there's a certain amount of time they have to charge you for it, and then they can't. And I know certain things that I did, and I kind of keep an eye on the calendar and say, okay, am I in the clear on that one yet? Okay, yeah, I'm on the clear for this one, but this one I got to wait for another year. And it's one of the shitty things about living a life like that is every time the phone rings, you start to wonder, you know, are you going to hear that it's the police department and they want to talk to you? I did actually get a call like that once. It's one of the reasons I never really liked talking on the phone, but this really kind of killed the phone for me, and it's never really come back. But I came home from a business trip, and I had stopped off and, without going into the details, done a couple things that might have gotten me in trouble with the state officials. And I'd stop in a certain town to do that and then finish my trip home. And when I got home, there was a message on my answering machine from the sheriff's department in this town where I had stopped, asking me to call them back. And I never called them back, and they never called me back. But I always wondered about that call and what troubles might have been looking for me there. And fortunately, the 12 steps do not require one to put oneself in further danger. You don't have to do any, in fact, we're not permitted to do any more harm. In working the 12 steps, we have to work them in such a way that we don't do additional harm to anyone, and that includes ourselves. So the 12 steps don't require us to turn ourselves in, let's say, to the police. Now, if it were appropriate, let's say if someone had done something like it, where someone had died, and for your, you know, for the purposes of, for your own conscience sake, one might be encouraged, you know, like a priest might encourage you to turn yourself in, but probably wouldn't turn you in themselves. They experience the same way. But, you know, it often doesn't do you think about those things, but then sometimes it does, especially on nights like tonight, because I do think about being, you know, being in that situation where I wanted so much for someone to go home with me, and in a situation where she was drunk and I was drunk, and, you know, anything might have happened, and what the potential, you know, ramifications for that for my life might have been, and even worse, this may be one of the worst things I can confess. It's certainly in the top five. There was a point where I didn't get drunk anymore. When I was on the prowl for a woman, I would, you know, take one drink and nurse it the whole night, because if I was not drunk and she was, that made it easier for me to get what I wanted. Now, that's real. I mean, you're getting real, real close to a precipice right there. I don't think I ever crossed the line, but, you know, I'm an interested party here. You know, it's very possible that I could be deluding myself. So I'm glad to not be in that situation anymore. I know I'm going to share just a little bit more on that, and then I'm going to get away from it. I'm going to run like hell because I can't believe I just told you that. One of the first AA meetings I went to, there was a woman who shared her story, and there was a lot of stuff in it like that, that men had taken advantage of her. And I realized, you know, that one of those men might very well have been me. And, you know, so I'm sitting there in tears in the back. I'm just unable to even express myself. You know, just wanting to run away and not even, you know, have to look this woman in the eyes anymore. You know, I don't know that there was any kind. I'm just saying, you know, it could have been. Of all the drunk women I chased, of all the high women I chased, you know, I probably wouldn't recognize 95% of them now. So it's something that stays in my head, and it's the amends. Clearly, there's an amends to be made there. I'm not exactly sure what that looks like. I've thought about it some in the past. You're writing a letter. Often they say if you can't get in contact with someone that you've wronged, what your sponsor has you do is write them a letter. And you don't have to send it if you don't know where to send it, first of all. Or second, if sending it might cause more harm, then you don't send it. You just you read it to your sponsor. And that's the amend. But somehow that just didn't seem to do it. And then I was speaking at some meetings at the city hall they had for offenders that they were to get out of going to jail. You could talk to somebody, you know, they had a whole day of people talking to them about how dangerous it was to be out drunk and, you know, chasing women around. And I did that for a while, but I don't think the people who sponsored that knew the extent of my sort of, you know, that there was illegality in my past. I came close to it when I talked in the meetings, you know, in their functions, but I didn't go all the way because I didn't want to have them come up and arrest me in the middle of my little spiel. And then it sort of changed. The person who was in charge of it changed. And called me, wanted to talk to me, interview me, because he was, you know, putting together a new program, and I never called him back. I just got this vibe from him that said, you know, I really do not want to be talking to this person about my checkered past. Boy, it sure is wonderful that they don't ask me questions about this stuff in job interviews. Wouldn't that just put me right to the top of the list? Well, anyway, when things like this happen, for me at least, I think it works well for me to think about, again, as I said at the top of the show, what is it that's driving these behaviors? Why did I feel the need to go out and spend a bunch of money that I shouldn't have spent? To put myself in a situation, and it might have been worse if my card didn't have that limit on it. And I know I have been triggered an awful lot over the past couple of weeks because we're about to open a new show at the theater. And it's we're calling it a burlesque review. I don't think that that's really accurate. What it is it's six young women in lingerie singing songs. And they're very attractive, and they're very nice, and they're very talented. And none of them, I mean, they barely know that I'm alive because I'm the guy at the back of the room who adjusts the microphones and the lights. And so the only time they have any reason to talk to me is if there's something wrong with their microphones or their lights, and then they're generally pissed off if something like that happens. Now, it's not that I seriously believe anything would ever happen with any of these girls, because they are just not. I mean, with one possible exception, they're all younger than my daughter. And I'm not going to go there. My daughter has instructed me. I'm not permitted to go there. My daughter gets veto power on anybody I date, by the way. I've given her that because she disliked both of the women I was married to. So I'm going to let her make the evaluation before I these ladies go very far. And yes, that does include that does include her mother. My first wife was my daughter's mother. That they have gotten along better here in the last 2 years since my granddaughter was born. But my daughter was raised by her maternal grandparents, and then my ex-wife remarried when my daughter was about 12, and they decided they wanted to have a happy family, you know, and moved in with us. And of course, my daughter raised by her grandparents never really had limits or any kind of. My daughter is the only grandchild on both sides, so she is rather spoiled. But it all came out pretty well. We're all friends, but no, I could. There were times when I could listen many hours over the phone of long monologues from my daughter about everything that was wrong with her mother and her stepfather. And she'd say, "I want to come live with you." I'd say, "You don't want to come live with me. Because, you know, if I'm the one setting the rules, you'll be mad at me." And I didn't want her to be mad at me. I fully benefited from that, from being the non-custodial parent. I got to be the cool parent. That was a lot of fun. I really did. I worked hard never to run down her mother in front of her until she turned 18. Then the gloves were off. I still don't really either, but she knows. She knows. And that's one of the things, too, when I have one of these experiences where a lot of money goes down the tubes. And, you know, there's so many times when Brenda was growing up that I should have been able to help her and I wasn't able to, because of all the money I was spending on acting out. And, you know, I couldn't put any money into her wedding because of all the money I'd spent acting out. And the worst one, I shouldn't tell you this story because I almost always tear up when I tell it. I took her to a Renaissance fair. You're familiar with those. You go, everybody's dressed in the Renaissance garb with the castle and all that stuff, and they have jousting tournaments, turkey legs and whatnot, and went to this dress store. She wanted to buy a dress, a medieval dress with the cone head, cone hat, and all that. And I forget how much it was, but I didn't have the money, and I got mad at her because I didn't have the money. And you know, I was the one that spent the money, and I knew exactly where it went. And that experience has haunted me ever since. I've apologized to my daughter for it about 100 times, and she has accepted my apology about 100 times. But it won't go away. It won't get out of my head. And now, I mean, that comes back to my head, and when I have a phone bill I'm supposed to pay, which actually I could pay. I still have enough left in there. As I say, it didn't all go. It's just I haven't seen her for a month. And I like to go see her, because that way I can see my granddaughter at the same time and then take her the money. What if that spending curve hadn't been on my card and I just wiped out everything that was in my checking account? And then, I'm sorry, dear, I can't pay that phone bill. I gotta go beg my parents for it. Things could get pretty ugly here in Mudtail Central over the next few months. I mean, I think my rent on this apartment is $500 a month. I spent $500 now. That's one more month of rent that I would have had. Okay, enough of Mudtail beating itself up. I'll keep doing it after I'm off the air anyway, but you guys don't want to hear it. What else can I tell you about? Now we're hoping, things were opening up two new shows at theater. Shoes like Ed Sullivan. Oh gosh, I didn't talk about my blog, did I? Because I didn't write about Mr. Guitar, Mike Guitar, this week. Because I got kind of tired of it. I wrote instead about going to see the new Star Trek movie. And I enjoyed it. I liked it. I think what I said was I liked the movie, but I still miss Star Trek because the movie isn't really much like Star Trek, at least the old Star Trek. And I made a list of the things I liked about it, and there were many. I made a list of things I didn't like about it, and I made a list of things I really, really didn't like about it. I call it the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think it was pretty balanced. I think I had 6 good, 4 bads, and 2 uglies, so it was 6 and 6. I didn't really jump on the movie. I did like the movie. I thought, if someone asked me, should I see it, I'd say, yeah, I think you would like it. That's what the studio has finally managed to do. I mean, since 1966, they've been trying to sell Star Trek to people. And it's always been a very niche sort of business. And now J.J. Abrams has made it to where everybody likes it. But the price of that is that it's really not Star Trek anymore. They had to neutralize a lot of things that made Star Trek Star Trek. The thing I really dislike the most is I don't like the way that they're portraying Captain Kirk, who is one of my childhood heroes. And they're kind of making him into a wuss. I really don't like that. But you can read more about that in the blog. That's at mudtoesasquatch.com. And if you want to make a comment about it, please do. But please also write something in your comment that will prove to me that you're not a bot, because almost all of my comments come from bots. That's also, you could get in touch with me on Facebook. There's a Mudtail Sasquatch Facebook page, and the blog entries typically are there as well. You could also write to me on Gmail, mudtailsasquatch@gmail.com, although I'm not sure if I've checked that in the last several months. Because I have another Gmail address that's sort of a personal Gmail address, and I tend to check that one and then forget to check the Mudtail Sasquatch address. And you can follow me on Twitter. I also probably haven't been on Twitter for a month because I've only got 5 followers. So if you want to get on there and follow me, I'll start using Twitter, and I'll make sure I check to see if that's happening. Okay, I just got 90 seconds. Half an hour flies by just as it always does. So I want to thank you once more for joining me, and actually I probably thank you again because I always forget that I did it. Next week will be, I don't know, probably more stuff. I don't have money to go out and screw up the way I did tonight. Oh, next week I can tell you whether I decided to reset my sobriety clock or not. Okay, so you can look forward to that. Okay, thank you once more for listening to the program, and we'll see you next week. Bye now.